Montreal, the Governor's Council in DC. I did meet with Secretary Vilsack when I was there, and then we've been at the Greenbrier in West Virginia for the National Governors and got home last night.
Before you start asking other questions, can I ask you a political question? Can I ask you what you think of Trump? Will you support Trump if he's the nominee?
Well, I don't think he's going to be the nominee, but, you know, he, like any other candidate, has an opportunity to express their viewpoint. And if you remember what happened 4 years ago, we had a lot of people that were the front runner at some point in time. But Iowans tend to reward people that work hard and spend a lot of time in the state. And so going to all 99 counties, meeting with the people, putting together a good organization has been the recipe for success in the Iowa caucuses. And so we'll see what happens. I want to be a good host and be encouraging to all the candidates to come to Iowa. And so far, I think we're getting a lot of attention, a lot of interest, and Iowans are following this race very closely.
Okay. Can you repeat whether you would support him or not? Our cameras are now rolling.
Well, you know, I want to be a good host and encourage all the candidates to come to Iowa. And I've shared with the candidates how I think you can win. The way that Senator Grassley has won, the way that I've won, the way that Lieutenant Governor Reynolds and now Joni Ernst, and that is go to all 99 counties, meet with the people, answer their questions, share your views on how you want to lead the nation in the vision you have to restore America's leadership in the world, and then let the people decide. And recognizing what happened 4 years ago, I suspect a lot of people may become the leader at some point in time, but it's a long time between now and February, and I think Iowans at the caucuses will reward a candidate that works hard and goes all over the state, builds a solid organization.
But you said you don't think that Trump will be the nominee.
I don't think it's likely that he will be the nominee in the end, again, it's way early. And polls at this point in time tend to reflect name recognition. And obviously, he's a TV personality who has a lot of recognition. But there's a lot of really good candidates in this race. And I think Iowa voters are taking it seriously and are going out to meet the candidates. And as I told them, you need to make a good first impression. But that certainly doesn't win you the Iowa caucuses. You have to come back again and again. I even go back to the Ronald Reagan-George Bush race in 1980. John Sears was managing the Reagan campaign and thought he could just do one rally per congressional district because Ronald Reagan was the great communicator. But George Bush and Barbara Bush and the Bush family went to all 99 counties. And guess who squeaked out a victory in Iowa? George H.W. Bush. So that is, and obviously that's the way Iowans have responded to many candidates over the years. And so I still think that's a good formula to do well in Iowa and to launch your campaign.
President Reagan used to speak about the 11th commandment within the Republican Party. Has Trump ripped that page out of the GOP playbook?
Well, I think what he said about Senator McCain is certainly inappropriate. I mean, we respect and admire people that serve their country, all veterans, but especially someone like John McCain, who was tortured and a prisoner of war for many years. And so what he said about McCain, I think, was truly out of line and inappropriate.
Secretary Vilsack said it would be up to states to decide about the vaccinations, should the vaccine prove effective and it be available for widespread use. What would be your decision in that regard?
Well, I've talked with Secretary Vilsack about this and about the possibility of vaccination from the beginning of this discussion. So we want to collaborate and work with the USDA. We're pleased to hear that they feel they have a vaccine now that is more effective. And so we're going to continue to review and look at the evidence and the information about this and how effective it is. We obviously want to talk with the Turkey Federation, the poultry industry, and make sure, and all of the producers in Iowa, in making a thoughtful decision on this. So, but I'm pleased that the USDA is working on a vaccine. I think that in light of what we've gone through and the huge losses that we've already sustained in this state, that is an appropriate thing to do.
It's a trade issue?
Well, it is a trade issue because some countries will not accept products from that have been vaccinated. And so that's the issue that's of concern. And I think those that produce embryos or pullets have concerns about the impact this could have on their business as well. So it's somewhat complicated, and we have to consider all ramifications in making a decision. But I am pleased that Secretary Vilsack, because I had approached him about vaccination early on and maybe one of our first discussions, and we've had several telephone conversations, plus I met with him when I was in D.C. recently about this issue. But I think the USDA has learned some lessons. I thought his presentation this morning was excellent. He pointed out that some mistakes were made early. The rotations was a concern that we had, and that got better. And then we also got people stationed right here in Iowa and working directly with our emergency management, with our Homeland Security Emergency Management and our whole team, so that we had a collaboration and coordination. And so he and our own Secretary of Agriculture, Bill Northey, and I want to Mark Scouten, his people, and all the other agencies involved, I think learned some important lessons on this. And this is much different than any disaster we've ever dealt with before. But I'm hopeful that the lessons learned here will make us more effective in dealing with, if it's another outbreak of avian influenza or similar type of disaster.
Governor, he mentioned a disaster program would benefit this industry. Can we do that at the state level if it doesn't happen at the federal level?
Well, I think it's most appropriate to be part of the Farm Bill. And as he pointed out, because of budget constraints, it didn't get accomplished in the last Farm Bill. But I think there are issues involving non-traditional crops as well as poultry that could be addressed as part of disaster assistance. As you know, for your traditional crops, we have crop insurance, and crop insurance has been an effective risk management tool. And having that for the poultry industry, having it for non-traditional crops like fruits and vegetables could also be helpful.
So you find that a pretty good
idea? Yeah, I think it's a good idea and something that makes sense. And obviously, it's a federal issue to be dealt with by the Congress. But I agree with the Secretary's comments that it would give some predictability and stability to the whole situation. And you know, the crop insurance situation has been very helpful when we've had, what was it, 2012, when we had the significant drought. That was really helpful to our producers. But you know, the unfortunate thing is that it doesn't cover poultry. So that is a shortcoming that I'd like to see addressed.
How worried are you that there will be a recurrence in the fall? I mean, we really could be facing the potential where they just get cleaned up, just get repopulated, and it hits again.
Obviously, we're concerned about that. That's one of the reasons for having this meeting, is to try to learn the lessons from what we went through. I think what we know is the higher temperatures kill the virus. And so we're fortunate that we got the warmer temperatures. We haven't had another outbreak, I think, for about a month. But the concern is what happens when the temperatures go down and we have duck and geese migrations in the fall. There's a potential for this again. We want to be as prepared as we can and do everything we can from a biosecurity perspective to avoid it reoccurring or having it spread like it did this spring.
I didn't come planning to talk about Trump, but since it came up, one last thing on that. You said you don't think he'll be the nominee. He's indicated if he's not the nominee, he might consider a third-party run. Would that hand this to the Democrats?
I'm not going to speculate on that stuff. I guess what I want to do is be a good host and encourage all the candidates to come to Iowa to assure them that Iowans take this responsibility seriously, that this is going to be a level playing field, and that, remember, this is July of the year before the general election, and a lot will happen between now and then. The caucuses aren't till February, and if you remember 4 years ago, I think we had 6 or 8 people that at one point in time were the leader for the Iowa, for the nomination in Iowa. And then at the end of the day, Santorum squeaked out a narrow victory. So Iowans tend to reward hard work and going to all 99 counties and meeting with the people and answering their questions. And then the other thing is putting together a good statewide grassroots organization. And there's a lot of candidates that are working on that, and some of them gotten very little attention. People like Governor Perry. I think he's going to do a lot better than some people expect because he's been here a lot. He's building a good organization. Governor Walker is committed to going to all 99 counties. And so you've got, and Carly Fiorino has made, I just heard that she made a great presentation down in Lee County. They had a huge turnout in Lee County, not a Republican stronghold. And she also had a huge turnout in you know, Dr. Carson. So there's a whole lot of candidates. Obviously, I like governors, and there's some really good governors in this race and former governors. And I think we just have a strong field of candidates, and I think Iowans are blessed to have the attention and the opportunity to meet the candidates. And I think we need to take our responsibility seriously. And I, again, think we could see a record turnout for the Republican caucuses.
Is there a downside to so many candidates, though? I mean, overstimulation, too much in our faces through this? I mean, we've never seen this.
I like it. For the state of Iowa, I think it's a good thing, and obviously it's beneficial to the state. I know the television stations, the media certainly benefit from this. I also think that, you know, the restaurants, the hotels, and all the other so it's got to benefit the Iowa economy, but more importantly, it gives us an opportunity to personally meet the candidates. People in a lot of other states are really jealous. They'd like to have the opportunity to meet the candidates face-to-face like we do in Iowa, be able to answer them, be able to ask them questions.
What response have you gotten from the RNC about your complaints about the debate?
Well, I have had a discussion with both Reince Priebus and with Roger Ailes about the debates. And it's a big dilemma. I think nobody anticipated you'd have more than 10 candidates. And trying to accommodate this is a challenge, I think, for both the media that are hosting these, like Fox and I guess CNN, and for the party. As I've been told, and my suggestion was have two panels and choose randomly who's on it. Well, and I had a really frank, good discussion with Roger Ailes about it. He was my media consultant for two of my campaigns, so I have a lot of respect for him and for his abilities. And he said, well, the concern there is the front runners, the people that are really, he doesn't know that that would be fair to them, but he also wants to make sure that the other candidates are given exposure. So they're looking at having, I guess, two different panels, but not necessarily choosing the participation randomly. It's a difficult thing. Most important to me is that every candidate be given a fair opportunity to share their views and answer the questions, and then let the people decide who they think would be the strongest and best candidate.
I had a question, a final question. People from Des Moines are facing a big increase in the Des Moines Water Works fees. I think they're talking about a very steep increase, at least partly because of the situation with removing nitrates. Is it possible that the state will step step in and provide, or that you'll seek some federal assistance to try to mitigate, to try to help reduce the impact on because of the...
The Des Moines Water Works ought to just tone it down and start cooperating and working with others like Cedar Rapids is doing and other communities in the state of Iowa. I think we in the state of Iowa want to have clean water, and we want to do everything we can. We have a nutrient reduction strategy. We're working together on a collaborative and cooperative basis. If they want to cooperate and work with us, they're much likely, more likely to get assistance and support. If they're continuing to sue and attack other people, that's not going to get them the kind of assistance and support they'd like to have. So Des Moines Water Works has gone about this in the wrong way. They've alienated a lot of people in the legislature and elsewhere, and I hope they'll just tone it down, decide to work with us in a cooperative basis, and we're certainly interested in working with them. We want everybody to have clean water in our state, and we want to do everything we can to make sure that that happens, and we think this kind of filing lawsuits and attacking people is not the right way to do it.
Richard. Governor, your latest approval ratings in the Quinnipiac poll seem to be slipping. How concerned are you that the public doesn't seem to be supporting your latest vetoes?
Well, first of all, I would point out the only poll that counts is one taken on election day. I've been pretty successful in those polls. And I look at the long view, what we can accomplish for the good of the state of Iowa. And I'm very proud of what we've accomplished. And I've seen polls up and down over the years. That, and I don't really pay that much attention to polls. My focus is on serving the people and making sure that we have a financial situation that is sustainable for the long time. We have stability and predictability. We have, at this point in time, I think we've made great progress. And I think it's going to take a while before some people will see the benefit of what we've done. But we're just in the process of implementing our mental health redesign. And we think that's going to give us better services, closer to the people, and as well as the teacher leadership and compensation system to improve education, our goals to improve the health care. And so, you know, this is at an early point in the process of implementing these policies. And I've always taken the long view. And I guess there are too many politicians that just look at today. I'm looking at the next generation. And what kind of Iowa are we going to leave them? Having been governor during the farm crisis, we put in place policies to diversify the economy. And now, and I'm just talking to Secretary Vilsack about this before I came in, and he totally agrees, and he has been very helpful in this, the bioeconomy. I was just in Montreal. It used to be, when I first became governor, Iowa was totally energy dependent on foreign fossil fuel, a lot of it coming from foreign countries. Today, we produce more ethanol than we consume in gasoline. We're a leader in producing biodiesel. We are producing 28% of our electricity by wind, and it could be, it's estimated it's going to be 40% by the year 2030. We're also beginning to get actively involved in solar energy. And all of those things are examples of progress and reducing our dependency on foreign oil and making Iowa not only more energy independent from renewable sources, but creating good jobs, improving farm income. And that's the vision that I have, that's shared by Secretary Vilsack and many others, that's made a real difference. And I think the people of Iowa will recognize and appreciate those long-term commitments. And this state is now a leader in the bioeconomy. At that conference that I attended in Montreal, we had over 1,200 people representing 40-some countries. And Iowa is clearly recognized as a leader, not just in things like renewable fuels, but if you go to places like Eddyville, you see over 100 products, food, feed, fuel, pharmaceuticals, nutraceuticals, all kinds of products that are replacing petroleum house products with bio-based products. And that's really the future, and we're really proud that we had the vision to begin that initiative back in the farm crisis period of the 80s and to build on it, and now we've got some real momentum.
Right.
So what are your final thoughts, and what would you say to those islands as we don't know what the future holds for avian flu, and if it mutates, because the flu has a tendency to do that, what do you tell them, and how do we recover?
We're trying to move as quickly as we can. First of all, we've disposed of all the dead birds, and now we're in the process of cleaning and sanitizing those facilities and want to get them back into production as quickly as possible. So hopefully they can get back to work. And of course, we're also growing other parts of the economy. Despite this, besides the job losses due to the avian flu, our unemployment rate has dropped to 3.7%. We have a record number of people employed, and we're working every day to bring more business and jobs to the state. But my heart goes out to the people that have been dramatically affected, the workers, the producers, and the suppliers as well. So this ripples through the economy, and we want to do everything we can to recover as quickly as possible and hopefully do everything to avoid a reoccurrence of it this fall or later on.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you.